world of deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. It's the David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Monday, the 23rd of February, year of our Lord, 2026. Well, this last weekend, we got a clear example of Trump's absolute contempt for the rule of law in terms of the overthrowing of his tariffs, as well as his egonomics. It's not economics, and it's not geopolitics. It's egopolitics as well. He immediately demonstrates why the founders wisely chose not to give these powers to one person. His knee-jerk reaction is to say, well, I'll do 10% tariffs on the entire world, and then the next day he jumps it to 15%. How does anybody run a business under these kind of chaotic, constantly changing circumstances? And as we see in Mexico, the drug cartels have assumed the military power of states. You might want to keep that in mind as you look at this Iran war. What could an adversary, the United States, do with mercenaries like the drug cartels in America, in our country? We'll be right back. Yeah, it truly is amazing when you look at the, you know, what is happening in Mexico. Big story worldwide, of course, when you have these types of terrorist events happening. And they had some guy whose name was Nemesio Cervantes, the nemesis of Cervantes, I guess, the guy who did Don Quixote. But it's kind of the Spanish Shakespeare. But when you look at this, and as the U.S. is ramping up the physical aspects of the war on drugs, and of course, perhaps this is what it was all about to start with, right? Because there was absolutely no possibility, and we've demonstrated this for 50 years, you can't stop people from using drugs by using the police. It's a spiritual issue. And so we're going to ignore the spiritual war, so we're going to get the real thing, I guess, and we're going to probably get that good and hard here in America. But I want to focus first on the tariffs. And, of course, Trump's rage and temper tantrum, first at the Supreme Court, then at the entire world. He's going to tax the world, right? And you stop and think about it. How does this make any kind of economic sense? Well, it doesn't, except that the calculus of Trump is not whether or not there is a principle involved. It's not about the rule of law, the Constitution, or anything else. It's not about economics either. It's about loyalty and power. Everything is about that for him. So I call it egonomics and egopolitics, not geopolitics. And so when the Supreme Court says, A, there's not an emergency, and B, you don't have the legal authority even if there was an emergency.
Emergency. Everybody to get from street. Emergency. Everybody,
yeah, remember that? Remember that, the emergency? You know, we've got three branches of government, right? We have the legislative, the judicial, and the emergency branch. He claims emergency about everything, and that gives him supposedly the power to do anything that he wants, which is what he said. He said, I can do anything I want. I can destroy a country over there if I want to, right? It's amazing the ego of this guy and how dangerous he is to everyone, but especially to our country. He's made us the pariah of the world, and rightfully so. And so he immediately jumped into his ego politics, you know, just like he did with the ICE thuggery. There's ways to approach the issues. And by the way, there's a large report that came out from the Heritage Foundation talking about the welfare magnet of schools for illegal aliens. And this goes back to an old Supreme Court decision that was wrongly decided. And it pointed out that, you know, if we were to, it's a tremendous cost. And just in Texas alone, the number of students tripled from 2021 to 2024. In just 3 years, they tripled the number of students who come in and take English as a second language classes, right? So this is what's happening with it. I said the entire, I mean, I was gone by 2021. I mean, the big explosions happened since I've been gone from Texas. But I could see it happening before that, through the Trump years even. I even said, you're not going to have the American dream of owning a home if you're going to give dreamers a free education. And it's the same type of thing that we see in terms of in-state tuition, right? If in-state tuition is not a violation of equal protection, then why can't you charge people who are bringing their kids from a foreign country in for a free education? Why can't you charge them for tuition? Some states need to test that Supreme Court decision. They've had six of them who have tried to do that, but they have that legislation has failed at the state level. Tennessee was one of them. And that legislation needs to pass so you can have that Supreme Court decision. It's the welfare. And, you know, they talk about magnet schools all the time. Well, the biggest part of the welfare magnet is the schools. That's a different thing, but it's really what they are. It's the magnet schools. And so when you look at Trump's immediate knee-jerk reaction was to criticize the Supreme Court. As some people pointed out, maybe that's not such a good idea since he's got so many cases coming up before the Supreme Court, since he has tried to ignore the rule of law in so many different ways. Maybe it's not a good idea to antagonize them. However, the people who voted against him, you know, it was a 6-3 decision. And the people who voted to take down the tariffs that he demanded, three of them, of course, were the Democrat women who were put in by Obama and Biden. The other three were Roberts and two Trump appointees. Two of the three Trump appointees voted against him. And I'm surprised that it wasn't 9-0. I was really surprised that Alito and Clarence Thomas voted to let the president do it. It's like, I thought you guys cared about the Constitution. I thought you were originalists. How in the world do you fit this kind of thing into an originalist interpretation of the Constitution? It just isn't possible. And as the New American has pointed out, they still haven't gone back and looked at the constitutionality of what is being done in so many different ways of the legislative branch not doing their job. They pass everything over to the emergency branch and do nothing. They pass it over to the bureaucracy, which is all under the emergency branch. And so it's kind of fitting, I think, since Trump has done so much to attack small businesses and destroy them with the lockdowns and the CARES Act and a payroll protection plan, that most of it went to the big businesses because, of course, Trump redefined what a small business was to include his businesses. And so more than 50% of the money that was earmarked to help small businesses survive his blatantly unconstitutional tyranny of a lockdown, most of that money, over half of that money, went to 5% of the companies. And the people who had small businesses, and put that in the past tense, people who had small businesses once upon a time before Trump, they got nothing, basically. A little pittance that was there. And then, of course, there's Howard Lutnick. Lucky lying Lutnick. And he's at the center of this. He's basically selling shorts on the Trump tariffs as he's pushing the Trump tariffs. Basically, what he was doing was derivatives of hedges of this. So they made an offer. His company, Cantor Fitzgerald, made an offer to a lot of different companies. And, oh, by the way, even though they've come out and denied it, the emails are there. And you've got Wired and other publications have shown the emails. That doesn't stop Howard Lutnick. Look at what he did with the Epstein files. Even though the emails pointed the finger at him, showed what he was doing, he committed perjury. He lied under oath. Even with the emails there, he continues to lie. And so you can discount what they said about this because we've got the emails to show this, just like with the Epstein stuff. Well, so what they did was they went around to companies and said, you know, you've paid a fortune in these Trump tariffs because it's American companies that are paying it. So American companies are going to either go out of business or they're going to pass those costs along to the customers. That's the way it works, folks. Just like with minimum wage and other things, like you either pass those costs along or you go out of business. Anyway, he goes to them and says, yeah, these tariffs are really big, but there's a Supreme Court case out there. Now, you know, if you think you're going to win the Supreme Court case, then go for it. And then you can go through the process of trying to get your money out of this. Or I'll give you 20 to 30% of your potential refund. And I'll bet that these things get overturned. That's what Lutnick and his company are doing, Cantor Fitzgerald. They're betting that the tariffs that Lutnick was pushing as being vital to American interests, they're betting they're going to be overturned. And now they get overturned, they can go through and collect these things and get 70 to 80% of the tariffs that have been paid. You know, we're talking over $200 billion, I think. The Trump administration has thrown out figures of $600 billion or whatever, but now as I see it, they lie about everything. As I see it now, most people are putting the figure at around $200 billion in terms of tariffs that have been paid and now need to be refunded. And so, hey, Cantor Fitzgerald has set themselves up to take 70 or 80% of that from the people that did the emails with them. And there are letters and emails that show it, and still the Lutnick people lie. Of course, he says, just like Trump does, it's my family that's doing it. It's not me. I have nothing to do with my family business. It's my sons who are doing it. And by the way, while all this stuff is happening, you got Donald Trump Jr. and Eric holding a big crypto conference last Wednesday where they are touting their new stablecoin as the replacement for the U.S. dollar. These guys want to rule the world, folks. Again, the answer to the question for Rockefeller, it's asked him by the reporter, you know, you're the richest man in the world. How much is enough? Rockefeller said, just a little bit more. Well, that's not exactly the answer. How much is enough when you have billions of dollars that you couldn't spend in 100 lifetimes of lavish living? How much is enough? And what are you really after? You're not after money anymore. You're after power and control. That's what's enough. That's what these people all want. And so again, the Trump boys are out there saying, even portraying themselves as victims as they're trying to become the rulers of the world. You have to understand, Trump and his family are not anti-globalists. They don't like the people who are in charge right now, the people who are high up in globalism, because they want to replace them. Just like they don't like the Democrats because they want to replace the Democrats, but they're just like the Democrats. You know, the Trumps want to be not end the globalism. They want to be the global kings, the global tyrants. That's really what they're after. And so let's take a look at what the Supreme Court did with this emergency. Again, three branches of government, legislative, judicial, and the emergency branch. we need to redo the Schoolhouse Rock. how law is made, and they don't make laws anymore. They do regulations that are passed on the by the bureaucracy under the emergency branch. So the Supreme Court, throughout most of Trump's tariffs, but of course, Trump had been doing that to himself. Trump always changing orders, I think, is a better way to put the taco thing. They say Trump always chickens out. I think it's always Trump always changing orders. You know, those executive orders based on emergencies. It's vital that I do this. I've got to do this because it's emergency. And then the next day he says, well, I'm going to change it. Did the emergency change? No, there never was an emergency. So again, it was a 6-3 decision, which is really crazy to see Clarence Thomas and Alito, usually the best guys on the bench. This was a slam dunk. It should have been a 9-0 thing because this is clearly not an emergency. And if it were an emergency, they would still have to prove that this IEEPA Act gave him the power to do this. So there's two questions here, but they don't even get really up to bat because it's not an emergency. There's nothing different about the trade deficit than we've had for my entire lifetime. It's not like it has suddenly surged. I saw that happen once with it, when OPEC flexed its muscle. But that's not what happened with us. And so there clearly isn't anything that's unusual and certainly not anything that's an emergency. And so the foundation of it was a lie. And then the fact that he is the only president in 50 years that has attempted to do this with the Emergency Powers Act, IEPA, the Emergency Economic Powers Act. Again, it's not about economics, it's about egonomics. A 1970s era law that allows the president to, quote, regulate imports when necessary to respond to national emergencies that pose an unusual and extraordinary threat. And I think that's really looking more at sanctions than it is at tariffs that are there. And so Justice Roberts wrote the opinion for the majority. He said, "We claim no special competence in matters of economics or foreign affairs. However, we claim, as we must, the limited role assigned to us by Article 3 of the Constitution. Fulfilling that role, we hold that IEPA does not authorize the president to impose tariffs." In other words, what he's saying is that, and again, I don't think that the Supreme Court should have the Marbury versus Madison decision that gave them the power to review all laws for constitutionality. They can certainly issue an opinion on that, but that should not be the final word. I think if you got one branch that says yes, another branch that says no to something, you ought to have the third branch as a tiebreaker, don't you think? Except the emergency branches seems to be prevailing in most of these cases. So he says, again, they point out he's the first one to use this in the 50 years it's existed. So the emergencies were adjusted constantly as response to the so-called emergencies. And it began with fentanyl tariffs imposed on Canada. Everything Trump does is a lie, isn't it? It's just amazing. So the Trump sector-specific tariffs that rely on separate authorities, like those on steel, aluminum, and copper, were not an issue, and they remain in effect. And they are crippling our domestic manufacturers in many different ways. How are you going to domestically manufacture something if we have to pay more for steel than somebody else? And, of course, we don't do much domestic production of steel, aluminum, and copper. And so that just increases their costs, makes their products more expensive domestically, and makes them absolutely non-competitive internationally. So Kavanaugh, Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito said, "Despite the vigorous policy debates spurred by the Trump's tariffs, those debates are not for the courts to resolve." That's right. And again, it is not about economics. It's about constitutional powers. And those powers are not there. The Supreme Court strikes them down, but it doesn't do anything about Congress abdicating its power. It doesn't say anything about that, of course. And that is the real issue at hand. Congress has abdicated its power, and it is a strategy of avoiding accountability. You see, when Congress is again, I go back to it over and over again. People said, Nancy Pelosi, when they talked about Obamacare, she said, "We've got to pass it so we can find out what's in it." But what an idiot. Maybe if she didn't put out this massive bill of thousands of pages, they'd know what's in it before they vote. Well, that's only part of it. The other part of it is that they create these broad, sweeping programs and bureaucracies on the other side, and they throw it over to them, and they say, "You fill in the details." And that's the way that government works. She was actually telling the truth. And I know it sounded crazy, but she was actually telling the truth. You pass this new bit of legislation, maybe you create a new bureaucracy on the other side as well. You either create a new bureaucracy or you create this new agenda and you kick it over to the bureaucracy and you tell them to fill in the details. Congress does not want to do that. That'd be too hard to do that, number one. Number two, if they get it wrong and people get upset about it, including their patrons, their donors, then if the bureaucracy does it and gets it wrong, then they can come in as your savior and save you from the bad regulations that the people that they'd abdicated their responsibility to created. Whereas if they did it themselves, they'd have to accept responsibility. They'd have to reverse course and eat crow. They don't want to do that. So this is the way that it always works. The court correctly overturned an instance of executive overreach, says the New American. I agree with them. If left intact and even defended, Congress' underlying decades-long and unconstitutional delegation of power to the executive, now the emergency branch. And so Roberts said, AIPA's grant of authority to regulate importation falls short. AIPA contains no reference to tariffs or duties. The government points to a statute in which Congress used the word regulate to authorize taxation. And until now, no president has read AIPA to confer such powers. In a concurring opinion, Kagan, joined by Sotomayor and Jackson, in other words, these are three leftist Democrats appointed, agreed that Congress can delegate its tariff powers, albeit not under the major questions doctrine. And so what is the major questions doctrine? That is saying that if it is something that is really big, and this is really big, that Congress actually has to do its job. That is a doctrine that was created by the Supreme Court. It's not in the law, actually. Ironically, says New American, Thomas is one of the dissenters and took the most constitutional position on non-delegation, arguing, unlike his fellow justices, that Congress cannot delegate certain powers. But even he claimed that Congress can delegate its tariff authority. Why would he do that? I mean, the bottom line is that Congress's main power is the power of the purse. The fact that they spend the money and they can raise the taxes. And so how in the world can you say that they can't delegate certain powers, but they can delegate the central and key power that has been given to Congress? That makes absolutely no sense. I think there was politics. I'm calling political BS on this decision here. Congress delegation of powers, including those pertaining to tariffs, is wholly unconstitutional, writes the New American, and they're absolutely right. As are the IEPA and the various other statutes allowing the president to unilaterally impose tariffs. Look, it's the same type of deal as Trump saying, fortunately, I can ban whatever gun components I want. Remember when he did that with the bump stock? No, you can't. You don't have that power. The government doesn't have that power, so certainly you can't delegate that. I mean, it's even wrong for Congress or the Supreme Court to infringe on our right to keep and bear arms. No single branch has the authority to do that. And the worst branch to do that from a pragmatic standpoint would be the executive branch. Because again, it's up to the whims of one person as opposed to even Congress where they have to get a consensus. So Trump was railing against the Supreme Court, calling them disloyal. And again, he said, they're disloyal to this country and the Constitution. No, they're disloyal to him. That's what he's upset about. Trump's not upset about disloyal to the Constitution. He and his advisors and even this thug criminal convict, Steve Bannon, say that, we can do whatever we want. I don't care about the amendment that limits terms to 2 for the president. I don't care about that. They don't care about the Constitution. They're not loyal to the Constitution or the rule of law. But he does demand personal loyalty to him. Meanwhile, you had Thomas Massie and Rand Paul commented, and I liked their comments. Thomas Massie said, SCOTUS made the right decision on tariffs, and Rand Paul went further. He said, this ruling will prevent a future president, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, from using emergency powers to enact socialism. Yeah, we've got to stop the emergency branch. That's not a legitimate government function, right? And if we don't stop the emergency branch, the left is going to use it on steroids. They did that right away with Trump saying, fortunately, I can ban whatever I want in terms of guns. Remember that? And I said, the Democrats are going to do this right away. And that was in the middle of the 2020 campaign, and it wasn't even a week before Lala Harris said, I'm going to give Congress 100 days to enact my agenda of gun control, and if they don't do it, I'll do it myself by executive order, like Trump just did. And of course, Biden did continue on trying to do gun control by executive order. So all of these powers that Trump is usurping, are going to be used against us, and of course against Republicans as well. At a press conference on Friday, Trump said his administration would pursue other methods, practices, statutes, and authorities to impose tariffs, just like he does with his third term and Steve Bannon. I don't really care what it says. I'll find some legal prevarication to do whatever I wish, and I'll dare you to stop me. Unfortunately, all three branches of the federal government, says the New American, have largely abandoned constitutional adherence to the point where most of our nation's laws and judicial precedents are effectively divorced from the Constitution. And new unconstitutional laws and precedents are being added all the time. Restoring constitutional adherence starts with us. Educating our fellow citizens about America's founding principles and putting pressure on our elected officials to enforce the Constitution as written. By vigilantly taking action, we can reawaken the country to the principles that made it great. That is really the mission, I think, of the John Birch Society. New American is published by them. And that's an important thing, really important thing. It really does have to be a grassroots movement. People have to demand this. If we don't demand it, of course they're not going to do it. If we do demand it, we may or may not be able to get them to do it. But if we don't demand it, they absolutely will do whatever they wish. I got a comment here from Fuzzy Mateo. He said, just imported two containers from India for a customer of mine. They paid a $34,000 tariff. It's insane. And it doesn't even make any sense. If Trump's metric of economic success is selling more stuff to other people than we buy from other people, then why is he punishing the customers that we're successfully, the countries that we're successfully selling more stuff to than they're buying from us, or the, that we're buying from them, I should say. And over again, these ridiculous reciprocal tariffs that, again, there was no basis for any of that. And these things were put together by people who don't understand the first thing about math. Perhaps that's why maybe that's why Trump's casinos went bankrupt. You know, the old joke is that Vegas was a city that was built profit from people who don't understand math. Maybe that's why his casinos went bankrupt, because he can't keep them going because he doesn't understand math and the people he hires don't understand, as evidenced by his nonsense reciprocal tariffs. Punishing countries with whom we had a trade surplus. Why would you offend your customer? Why would you pick a fight with Canada even? None of it makes any sense. Live Free or Perish says, have you seen what's going on in Mexico? The technique map is being created. CIA and others have killed the drug kingpin, and there are fires everywhere. The airport's locked down along with the tourists. Yeah, exactly. That's one aspect of it. It's really a nice diversion, isn't it? But yeah, if we can escalate this drug war that the CIA has been doing, and it's a UN agenda that has been created by the CIA. CIA is the biggest drug pushers in the world. And if they can take out some of the competition and start a kinetic war, then maybe we can get that to spread to America. And if we get that to spread to America, then think of what we can do, how we can use that chaos. People are always trying to create chaos and distraction. Those are the 3D chess, right? Deny, distract, divert. That's Trump's 3D chess in a nutshell. Well, who was it that was the lead defendant in this? It was a guy, 67 years old, who has a small wine shop in Manhattan and has had that business since 1987. And he was afraid that the tariffs were going to run him out of business. And he said the president didn't have the authority to impose those without congressional approval. And he became one of the few dissenting corporate voices to publicly oppose the fees. And that has gotten him, most of the large and medium-sized companies were afraid to go on record attacking the president, because that's the kind of country that America has become. Don't you dare criticize Trump or he's going to get even with you. So he says, it was one thing to join the case, but then to be the lead plaintiff really gave me pause. So even he, even though he's a small business, he said he's been given, he's gotten so many threats that he's had to hire more security. I'm under constant attack through text, email, and I can't stop it, he said. So we keep our doors locked at the office now. But he said, we can't just raise our prices and we can't just pay it. Unlike the big companies that can write a check. And this is one of the reasons why Trump and his cabal like to do these types of things. You know, just like with the lockdown. The big companies can get on the phone with Howard Lutnick or the Rothschild lawyer from the first term. And let's see, what was his name? His first Treasury Secretary. Anyway, he worked for the Rothschilds for a long time. They can get on the phone with these guys and cut a deal with them. Not the small businesses. They got to work in the marketplace, not crony capitalism. And they have they don't have access to unlimited amounts of money from Wall Street. I mean, when you got a Wall Street firm, they can basically raise money just like the U.S. Treasury prints dollar bills. They can operate at a loss for decades. I know that because we competed against Blockbuster. And they, as soon as Paramount took it over, they stopped making a profit. But they didn't care. They kept the company going for another couple of decades because they're on Wall Street. You know, just like with Moderna, they never made a profit until Trump threw them tens of billions of dollars. But they were still making a lot of money because they were selling happy stories on Wall Street and playing people as suckers and fools. So, yeah, you have to actually operate in a marketplace with customers and things like that if you're not on Wall Street. But if you're on Wall Street, what you do is you get money from people. It's like a casino. So he said, we can't just raise this, so I had to do something about it. But and again, what are you going to do? It's not even the level of taxation, but it's the uncertainty. You know, Trump always changing orders. That's the real taco. You know, how much is the tariff going to be next week? How much is it going to be tomorrow? You know, if he has a bad conversation with a leader of a country somewhere, or maybe he had a little bit of indigestion from the meal he had at Mar-a-Lago last night, who knows, you might wake up and find that you got 100% tariffs have been put on the country that you that your supplier is in. How can you do business in a situation like that? Well, you can't. The Wall Street guys can lose money, though, until Trump is gone. But the other guys are going to go out of business. And so he said the tariffs are creating chaos, driving up prices and lowering profit margins. And the chaos is not just the high taxes. It's the uncertainty, always changing orders. I hear from people widely across the political spectrum how much they hate these tariffs, how they never expected this administration to do something of this nature, something this stupid. And again, where are all the articles from the MAGA people, you know, like WND and Breitbart and InfoWars and you name it, right? Where are the cheerleaders on all this tariff stuff? Do you remember when they were telling us, oh, don't worry, Trump is going to replace the income tax with the tariffs? It's like, okay, well, we've heard that story before. We've had, most of us don't like the income tax, the way the thing is set up. We'd love to see it go. We'd love to see taxes, if they're going to be collected some other way. So there's been a lot of different proposals about that. But everybody always stops and says, but wait a minute. If we add some kind of a VAT tax or whatever they're proposing, right? If you add that tax and you don't take away the income tax first, we're going to wind up with both of those. Guess what? You know, that's what I was saying along this line. And Trump kept dropping hints that that was what he's going to do, but he never said it directly. They said it for him. See, he said this, and if you decode that, I get out my QAnon decoder ring, and when Trump says this, what that really means is that he's going to get rid of the income tax. No, he was talking about making the tax cuts permanent. How do you make the tax cuts permanent if the income tax is not permanent? Right? That was never his intention. It was the intention of the MAGA cheerleaders and influencers to deceive the public. So Trump calls the Supreme Court justices who ruled against his tariffs disloyal. Again, it's ego politics. His calculation is never about law or principle or country. It's only about personal loyalty. Even though he said they're disloyal to our Constitution,
He goes on to say, it's my opinion the court has been swayed by foreign interests and a political movement that is far smaller than people would ever think. It's a small movement. In other words, they're going with a different political party, a different movement than my movement. So it really is about loyalty to his movement. I'd like to thank and congratulate Alito, Kavanaugh, and Thomas. Very proud of those justices. And by the way, just to show that it's about personal loyalty, he has invited those three to the State of the Union address. The other six justices, he's not extended an invitation to, and he said he may not do it. Yeah, it's about loyalty to the Constitution, is it really? Don't think so. Anyway, he talked about Gorsuch and Barrett, who he nominated and voted against him. Again, is this about the Constitution? Listen to what he says. Gorsuch and Barrett are an embarrassment to their families, quote unquote. I don't want to say whether I regret nominating them. I think the decision was their decision was terrible. I think it's also an embarrassment to their families. When asked by The Hill if he wants to see all the justices invited to a State of the Union address, he said, well, he said, three of them are invited. To be honest, I could care less if they come or not. So, again, it's about loyalty to him and about punishing those that he perceives to be disloyal. So then the 10% tariff that he throws on, and he can do this under a 1974 law that Congress abdicated their authority to do that. They allowed the president to impose tariffs for up to 150 days, about 6 months or so. And so that's why he immediately said, well, I'm going to do 10%. Then the next day he says 15%. So Cato Institute said, if Congress declines to act, the administration could, at least in theory, allow the tariffs to lapse and declare a new balance of payments emergency, and then restart the clock, he said. Yeah, there's no, when you've got a dishonest executive who is bound and determined to do whatever he wishes, and that's what he said, I can do whatever I want. I can punish a country that I don't like. I can reward another country. I can destroy a country if I want. And he doesn't mean that just economically. He means that militarily, as we've seen with Venezuela, as we're about to see with Iran, although I think he's going to find out that it's harder to destroy Iran than Venezuela. He said, as he adds the 10% tariffs in the course of the next day, taking it up to 15%, because Trump always changes orders. They come on top of the levies that remain intact following the high court's decision, which invalidated the tariffs. And again, the 10% global tariffs could mean lower U.S. tariff rates for some of the countries that had either struck deals with the Trump administration or were in ongoing trade talks. So I guess the negotiations didn't really apply, and we're going to just tax the entire world as a temper tantrum. The European Union, for example, had agreed to a 15% tariff as part of its trade deal with the U.S., so that's what they're going to get now anyway after the tantrum. This article was written on Friday, so they were saying, well, the EU's tariff, they'd already agreed to 15%. Now Trump is going to say, well, I'm going to do 10%. Then he upped it to 15%. When asked at Friday's press conference why he didn't want to work with the legislative branch, he said, I don't have to. I have the right to do tariffs. He also said, I can do anything I want. That's the problem, that he thinks that. And the problem is that I think is the reality, because of the passivity of the people who should be holding him to account, including his own voters. The Trump administration is also wielding Section 301 to launch several investigations into possible unfair trade practices, which could result in additional new tariffs. Said, we'll take in more money, he said, and we'll be a lot stronger for it. We're going to tax our way to prosperity. Have you ever noticed how Trump sounds just like Bernie Sanders? Remember when they were talking tax, income tax reduction, and Bernie Sanders said, they're looting the treasury, right? All he cared about was money and power to the government. He doesn't want you to have control over money. He wants the government to have all the money. The government that doesn't even need the money because the government has got a $40 trillion credit card that's out there. And they have no intention of paying it back. And if the debt and the deficit don't matter, the real debt and deficit, not the trade deficit, but the annual, the budget deficit, if that doesn't matter, why do we need any taxes for that matter, right? They're not coming anywhere close to meeting ends, you know, $40 trillion. How do you even get your head around a number that large? And so it's essentially saying, we don't need to pay our debts. We don't need to pay off the credit card. So why do they tax us? Well, because they want all the money. They don't want us to have the money because if we have money, we can make economic decisions and they don't have as much control and power over us. That's the purpose of these federal taxes. It's not to balance the budget. It's to make sure that we don't have a budget personally, that our families don't have a budget. And so as he rants about destroying countries, and it's like that quote from the Oppenheimer, you know, when he I've become the destroyer of worlds and everything. Trump is the guy who revels in all of that. Well, Bessent has called on U.S. trade partners to honor the tariff agreements. Well, you know, we'll see which ones, which of the many emergency orders should we honor with all this? And so, again, he attacks everybody who he sees as his enemy. And we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about the open corruption of the Trump regime. But I want to thank IRS Machine Gun. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. A little gas money. And before we go to break, I just want to thank, I meant to do it at the very top of the hour. I want to thank the people. I put out a call on Friday, said, you know, we are past the halfway mark. We've only got about a week left. And I said, I think what at the time we were not quite at a third. And so we put out the call and said, you know, if people could just contribute $5, we had a lot of people who contributed. And I want to recognize them. They are the producers of this show. We make the show available without a paywall. We want to have that information out there for free. And because there's a lot of things, what I try to do, I try to cover things that are a threat to people. And I don't want to charge people for that. But we do need to make ends meet. And so I appreciate the people who have supported this program. And I want to recognize the people who answered that call right away. Benjamin R., Susan L., these are regular supporters, always. Gregory C., Charles D., Joshua V., Jose G., Julie W., Daniel M., Susan L. again, and Scott L., Michael L., Kyle H., Brandon M., Kelly M., Michael P., Alex, Jeffrey C., McBrian D., and that he is a new supporter, so I appreciate that, Kelly K., Darren M., and Michelle V. Thank you very much. And also, I want to thank, that was on Zelle, on Cash App, Daniel F., Jesse H., Richard S., Jessica R., Eric S., Brian P., Simeon G., Chris H., and Evo I., who is also a new contributor. Thank you so much, all of you, for answering that call. And just to let you know where we are right now, I think we're up to 63% now after that. So that was a big boost. Thank you all. And we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Hi, Boo says, after 250 years, we're right back to where we started with a king. Well, we've had a king for 250 years. It's called the Constitution. What the people who founded this country said was lex rex. The law is king. Unfortunately, that's not where we are right now. We have a usurper in the White House. I refuse to call this guy president anymore. If I do it, it's an accident. This Trump usurper is one of the most obvious of all the oath breakers that we've had. He has nothing but contempt for the rule of law. And his family is the same. The Trump family says the U.S. dollar needs an upgrade. And they're the ones to do it. That's the headline from CNBC. And, of course, what the Constitution says, what the real king of the country, all these people, again, it's the analogy of Lord of the Rings. Remember the Return of the King and how you had the family of stewards that were in charge of that city, Gondor, the one that Boromir was from. And they had been stewards for so long, they thought of themselves as king. And that's the way our president, so forth, supposed president, that's the way he is. These people who take that office and sit in the Oval Office think of themselves now as the king rather than as a steward. And so it's time for us to bring back the Constitution, to bind them down with the chains of the Constitution. And what does the Constitution say about the dollar? It says they'll coin it in gold and silver. And, you know, that happened in 1792, as they point out in this article. And kind of interesting because the petrodollar garbage that we've got right now, that was concocted by Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon over 1971 and 1973. Why? Because the government had become so dishonest that they needed to come up with a new system to deceive people for another 50, 60 years, right? And so 1971, 1973 is when they're putting that together. So pick that midpoint of that, 1972. And it's like the dollar existed from 1792 to 1972. Interesting, isn't it? Just kind of switch those two middle numbers around. But it's still a fraud. Trump and his family began to market an alternative to the dollar last year. They dubbed it USD 1. On Wednesday, Eric and Don Jr. held a conference, crypto conference, at Mar-a-Lago. They told CNBC on the sidelines of a day-long crypto event that they hoped that they hosted why they thought that this should all change. And he said the Trump's company, World Liberty Financial. Folks, this is not about world liberty. It is about globalism and it's about tyranny. Interesting, they call it World Liberty Financial. It's about global tyrannical financial. They tout USD1 as an improvement on official U.S. currency. On their website, they call their crypto stablecoin the dollar upgraded, still the U.S. dollar, but for a new era. Should say a new error, E-R-R-O-R. Because we had the petrodollar error, now we're going to have the, and it's going to be a stablecoin. You know, this is why I believe they brought in Lutnick, because of his experience with the biggest stablecoin company, his company, Cantor Fitzgerald, very intimately involved with Tether, one of the largest stockholders, and if not the largest. And, of course, they helped to help Tether to accumulate treasury bills and make a profit for that. So that's his expertise. And I'm sure that he could help them to set up their own stablecoin. And these stablecoins, as I said before, it's like CBDC, right? Central Bank Digital Currency that everybody on the conservative side hates because they understand the control and surveillance that it brings. And yet, the left still likes it. In Europe, they're still going to call it the Central Bank Digital Currency, and they're going to have it run by central banks because those people are just blindfolded to tyranny right now. They're going to walk straight into it. And so they're not even bothering to rebrand it. Here, however, because there's been a lot of pushback, especially on the Republican side, they've got a Republican office holder, a president, who is going to tell them, no, we're not going to do CBDC. And you got people like DeSantis and Republicans in Florida saying, no, CBDC. And yet,
they're going to be open to a crony capitalist version of digital currency. As I said before, they're going to change the CBDC. They're going to upgrade it to CCDC, crony capitalist digital currency. That's really what they're going to do. And as they're talking about this with CNBC, of course, these are Democrats. They want the government running all this. And again, the government shouldn't be creating a dollar or doing anything else. Instead, the dollar should just be the government is there simply to coin real money, which is real money is gold and silver. They weren't creating a dollar. They were doing that in competition to the Spanish dollar that was out there. And again, that was not something that was backed up by the Spanish treasury. That was just them stamping that dollar. And so as CNBC is interviewing the Trump brothers, they are clutching their pearls and saying, wait a minute, we're going to have the, this is the president and his family is going to now do the dollar. They're now going to create the dollar, which the federal government should be doing that. Well, the federal government doesn't have the authority to do that. And certainly these crony criminals in the White House don't have the authority to do it. So World Liberty backers argue that the new cryptocurrency that they're building is not a threat to the dollar at all, but will help to ensure that the dollar remains dominant in the global crypto finance because USD1's value is pegged to it. Well, then don't call it stable. And it's not a coin. A coin is something that you stamp out of real money, gold and silver. But one big question is why, if the dollar needs modernizing, why it should be done by the private sector? That's CNBC's take on it. So they're fine with changing the dollar. They're fine with the surveillance and control aspect of it. CNBC has no problem with that. They just have a problem with the fact that the Trumps are going to make all the money off of it. I got a problem with all of those things. This is open, in-your-face corruption, folks. People talk about, well, the source code is out there for these for Bitcoin and other things that you can see it, right? Open source stuff. And this is open corruption, this crypto stuff. And that's what these guys are doing. As a matter of fact, a year ago, it's one of these Arab countries where they were holding one of these conferences, and Eric was talking at the time. He said, the banks are just awful. We don't like banks. We want to replace the banks. In 10 years, our stable coin is going to be a replacement for the banks. And that's what he's saying throughout all this stuff. He's talking about this interview with CNBC. He's talking about JP Morgan and all these other banks and Wall Street companies. Like, yeah, we can replace all them. Who's we? Yeah. The Trump family wants to replace all Wall Street. They want to replace all the banks. They want to replace the dollar with their cryptocurrency. Why do they call it world liberty? This is about world tyranny. It's about globalism. That's really what this is about. And corruption. Corruption on a scale that has never been seen before. CNBC says, why should the venture be in the private hands of a president and his family and not in the hands of the U.S. Treasury? Again, you know, they'd be perfectly fine with a CBDC, just like they've been perfectly fine with the fiat dollar. I'm not fine with either of those. I don't think the money should be in the hands of the U.S. Treasury. That's why we focus on gold and silver. And the lies that have established this whole fiat system, as this fiat system is, everybody's wising up to the lies and the corruption of the system, people are starting to turn to real money, gold and silver. That's why they're doing what they're doing in the marketplace. The big Wall Street banking system, argued the Trump brothers, this is Don Jr., so they simply aren't nimble or innovative enough to drive the needed changes. Eric Trump said, you're going to leave that to who? To J.P. Morgan? You're going to leave that to the federal government to make these changes? No. You need to leave it to the Trumps. They're geniuses, right? Eric Trump uses Wall Street, views it as overly complacent. He's right about that. This is what the Trumps are taking advantage of, complacency and strong-arm tactics. He says, so Wall Street is complacent and ripe for technological disruption. Yeah, we don't want J.P. Morgan doing this. We want the Trumps doing it. We don't want Wall Street doing it. We want the Trumps doing it.
So Eric and Don Jr. made it clear that the animating force behind their venture is not their glee at building a better mousetrap. Yeah, they're not trying to build a better mousetrap. They're not trying to invent something that is going to be more efficient. They're not trying to help the U.S. dollar folks. They're doing this because they say they are victims of being canceled. Well, they are, they're victims, and, they're just trying to defend themselves, but they're not trying to defend us. I mean, we look at all the evil that has been done by the federal government, and the federal government under Democrats as well. It is, they have been attacked with this stuff, and yet they're not concerned about anybody other than themselves. For example, $50 billion worth of lawsuits against people they say they've been wronged for, and yet they're not changing the government to protect other people. You know, as he puts this lawsuit of $10 billion against the IRS, and again, the IRS's entire budget, folks, is $20 billion. And so Donald Trump is suing the IRS because they put out his tax information. And, it was embarrassing and awkward for him or whatever. There was other people that they did it to. They did it to, I think, 40,000 some odd people. Do any of them get compensation? No, only Donald Trump, because he can tell the Justice Department not to fight his lawsuit. So he said, basically, I can just sign the check to myself. There was another billionaire who had $30 billion net worth instead of the $3 billion that Trump had at the time. And he just got an apology from the IRS. But there's been no real structural change to make sure that doesn't happen again. Instead, Trump is going to reward himself with $10 billion, saying that even though his net worth was $3 billion at the time, that he was injured by that amount. And he's doing that across the board, with private companies, with people who criticize him, and so forth. He's not about ending the bad things that the federal government does. He's about protecting himself. And he's not about opposing the globalists. He opposes the people who have been running the globalist system because he wants to replace them as king. Not because he wants a better system, but because he wants revenge. And they openly admit that. That's how they justify this. It's not about greed. It's not about Pinky in the brain wanting to rule the world. It's not about any of that stuff. They are victims. They're only trying to get what is due to them, right? See this all the time from the Trump family. We got into it out of necessity. They basically forced us to become kings of the world. We were the most canceled people in the world. I don't think so. Well, Trump Jr. said he concluded that the traditional banking system is a Ponzi scheme. And if people are that stupid to fall for the Ponzi scheme of the banking system, if people are that stupid to fall for the Ponzi scheme of the fiat dollar, hey, we can do all that stuff as well. We can take advantage of them. I can't remember who it was that said this, but there was some guy, he got into banking, and they asked him, why did you get into banking? He said, well, because I dealt with bankers, and I thought they were the dumbest people in the world. I thought I could do better than them. So these people are looking at this and saying, all this stuff is a Ponzi scheme. We can run it better than these other crooks out there. We can, and that's exactly what they're trying to do. But they're talking about it as retribution, saying they were forced into it. They talk retribution, but not the rule of law. We're not going to get that back. And then this whole thing with Lutnick, the firm of Trump's officials' family denies reports that it is standing to make a fortune from the tariff rulings. This is why I said at the top of the program. While Lutnick is pushing the tariffs for Trump, he and his family are out there. Of course, he says, just like Trump says, I don't have anything to do with that. That's my family's business. Give me a break. We all see through that. He's pushing the tariffs, and he's going around to different companies saying, these tariffs, I'll let you hedge against these tariffs. I'll pay you 20 to 30% of what you paid in the tariffs, and you sign over your refund to me. How about that? So they basically were selling hedges against the Supreme Court decision, against the tariffs. And they stand to make 70 to 80% of the tariff revenues that these large companies that they sign these deals with. And of course, Lutnick, first of all, he says, well, it's not me, it's my family, right? He didn't go to the Epstein Island. It was his family. He took the kids and the nannies and his wife. It wasn't anything about a business deal or anything. And then you find out more emails saying, yes, they did do a business deal. And yes, that business deal happened right after he went there, and on. So even though the emails exist and all the records are there showing that Lucky Lying Lutnick is lying about all the stuff, and they got the emails to prove it, and he continues, just like Trump, to tell people what we've all seen is not true. And he's doing the same thing here with this as well. Again, he's shoveling it off and saying, oh, it's not, you know, it's my family that went to Epstein Island, not me. It was my family that did the, offered the hedge derivatives for the tariffs out there, not me. And I had nothing to do with it. And they didn't even do this to take advantage of Trump. Didn't even exist. Didn't happen. And yet the emails are there. Just amazing how criminal these people are. Well, we're going to take a quick break, folks, and we'll be right back.
Making sense common again. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
APS Radio delivers multiple channels of music right to your mobile device. Get the APS Radio app today and listen wherever you go.
All right, welcome back. I got a couple of good comments here from Guard Goldsmith at Liberty Conspiracy. He said, there is no such thing as a balance of payments emergency. It's make-believe. Trade means that it's balanced by definition. Yeah, in other words, people on both sides that agree that this is what we want. And the government says, you can't have what you want. that seems to be the main rationale for government. You can't have what you want. Sorry. He also says Javier Milei joined the board of genocide, also the board of peace, right? With a $1 billion ante that he got from the U.S. taxpayer. You know, we told the farmers in this country after China stopped buying soy from them and soybeans and other things like that, Trump told the farmers to go pound sand while he gave Javier Milei $20 billion. And then later on he said, well, I'll give you guys 12. But it'll take a while. And, you know, they've still been waiting. That was back in September. In December, say, yeah, sometime in January. They haven't done anything at all for the American farmers. It's all about this club they're in, right? They're all part of the globalist club. And, of course, it didn't hurt Javier Milei to become a part of Chabad Lubavitch either. That's the reality of what's going on with that guy. Jason Barker, just think of this. He said, they're tokenizing our public lands, basically assuming ownership. Yep, that's right. These lands will then be used to distribute shares to foreign and domestic organizations we owe money to. You're absolutely right. This is the, what they're doing is they're taking this securitization nonsense that worked out so well with them with the real estate crash And it didn't work out too well for the rest of us. But they wanted to extend that to everything. I've got an article talking about that that we're going to get to, hopefully. Even doing it to humans. Because they like to bet on everything. You know, that's what you see with people like Jeffrey Epstein and Howard Lutnick. They bet on everything. That's the essence of Wall Street. As a matter of fact, one of the comments I saw, I think it was on Zero Hedge, said, well, if they would have called it Polycantor, you know, instead of Polymarket, yeah, they could have bet on that anyway. But that's the essence of Wall Street. It's a giant casino. They're betting on everything. I'll tell you what, I'll give you this percentage, and I'll wager you that the tariffs are going to come off, or the tariffs are going to stay on, or whatever. It's always about that. Well, we did have also over the weekend a lot of things happening. Well, the only thing that didn't happen, I guess, is yet is the war against Iran. But, of course, they're stockpiling, locked and loaded for that. And again, when I look at what is happening there in Jalisco, Mexico, and I think it was Puerto Vallarta, was that? Was that the town that was involved? I don't know my Mexican geography very well. but anyway, unfortunately, we may be learning more of it if we get involved militarily in this stuff and start the real drug war. The CIA would love to see that happen since they, I guess, are ready to make a move against their competitors in the drug, illegal drug supply.
So one of the things I'm concluding is I think Trump.
Okay. Well, that was Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'd like to hear what else she had to say. Can you hit that again, Travis? That was a mistake, but let's go ahead and do that. I think I've had that in here. Yeah, here we have. This is Catherine Austin Fitz about Trump was a general partner in all this stuff.
So one of the things I'm concluding is I think Trump was part of the operation. I don't just think he was a friend of Jeffrey. It looks to me more and more like he was an integral part of the operation.
He's and, absolutely right.
If Trump was, then likely Lutnick was as well, not just somebody who lived next door and helped him launder money. So this administration is the Epstein Network. It is the Epstein Network taking control of the U.S. government and ejecting its booster rocket. So by shutting down Jeffrey Epstein's operation, you know, whether he's still alive or not, it doesn't matter. They're simply ejecting the booster rocket and moving up. The reason the Department of Justice can't prosecute the Epstein Network is because the Epstein Network is running the government, Donald Trump, the Department of Justice. They are the Epstein Network.
She's absolutely right. As usual, Catherine Austin Fitz and her her organization is Solari. You can find them at solari.com. Well, we had a Mar-a-Lago shooting. A man shot dead. He was going to... This is one of the more absurd assassination attempts. He's going to bum rush Mar-a-Lago with a shotgun and a gasoline can, apparently, that's happening here. Who knows if any of this stuff is real or not? It's too soon to tell, but it does help to create distractions for Trump. And again, they love to portray themselves as victims. This guy is from a family that he says all cousin said all the family are avid Trump supporters. So we may be looking at a mentally retarded family here. I don't know, but that could be an explanation. Low IQ. We're big Trump supporters, all of us, he said. Everybody. But he described this guy as real quiet and never really talked about anything. He wouldn't even hurt an ant. He doesn't even know how to use a gun. Well, he certainly doesn't know how to do an assassination either. I'm just saying. Anyway, it came from a family of avid Trump supporters. They referred to him as an obsessed artist, 21 years old. They shot him dead. Again, this is, as they refer to it, they neutralized him. So this is this works out for Trump, gets the it's another distraction to take people away from what he's actually doing. So is it just serendipity or is it conspiracy? Too soon to tell.
I'm personally of the opinion that things have just gotten so insane that more of this type of thing is going to happen. There's a portion of the population that is more susceptible to this kind of mental illness.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the continual pressure and the anger gets to them in ways that it doesn't other people, causing them to want to lash out. They don't think about this is never going to work. It's just that I've got to do something. I'm too angry. I'm too furious. I mean, there was a story about, you know, a Trump supporter shooting his daughter because they just kept arguing about politics.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just, there are a lot of things that are psyops, and most things that you see in the news potentially are. But mm-hmm. I think this kind of thing is just what we're going to be dealing with. You know, the news cycle, it drives some people insane. And when the news cycle is this bad and depressing, it's going to be worse.
I agree. I mean, it is a crazy society, and people are losing it. They can't tell what's important. They can't tell what is real. Absolutely the case. Junk Silver, thank you very much. That's very, very kind. Thank you for the tip. He says, I appreciate you not keeping your show behind a paywall. The people who would never chip in are the ones who really need to hear it. Thank you very much. Here's $25 bill contributions on me. Well, thank you very much. I really do appreciate that. Thank you. Of course, silver's not junk anymore, is it? So I don't know, that's kind of an oxymoron, junk silver anymore.
We've got a comment here from High Boost. He says, Puerto Vallarta, ironically, Stu Peters was there last week.
Oh, yeah, it's a small world, isn't it?
It's a small world.
Well, Trump, talking about people that are crazy, Trump said he's sending a hospital boat to Greenland. Nobody knows why, and everybody's saying there's no details about this. Why is he sending a hospital boat to Greenland? And the people in Greenland say, we're doing
well,
just fine.
They're going to need it very soon. We're going to be bombing them, shooting them. They're going to need it.
That's right. And, of course, you know, when he bombed us with his fake pandemic, he sent hospital ships to New York and to L.A. Remember that? Never used, right? They didn't need 2,500-bed military field hospital set up in New York City. Never used. You know, Franklin Graham's Samaritan Purse does the same thing. Sets up a huge field hospital. Never used. Hospital ships in New York. Never used. Hospital ship in L.A. Never used. There was no pandemic, folks. They were killing people with the ventilators. And by the way, we're going to talk about the betrayal of Trump supporters, especially the MAHA people. I said from the very beginning, MAHA, they're misspelling it. It's ha-ha. They're laughing at you. He doesn't have any intention of doing any of that stuff. And now he's using the same quote-unquote authority for another emergency. This is the emergency branch of government, right? To compel the production of glyphosate. They're not going to end it. They're going to compel it. And worse than that, give them legal immunity like they did the vaccine companies. Yeah, you never let a good poison go to waste. That should be the motto of the Trump administration and MAHA. Anyway, so what's going on with a hospital boat to Greenland? I don't think they use glyphosate up there, but Trump put his announcement up on his Ministry of Truth social. He says it's on the way, and he put a picture of it up there as well. The hospital ship, and it's called the USNS Mercy, and there's another one called the USNS Comfort. And so he's sending one of these up there. Prominent Greenland activist said on X, no thanks. We in Greenland are healthy and we're doing well, sustained by our own traditional foods, including seal blubber, which is rich in vitamins and nutrients that keep our population strong for generations. Well, I know about seal blubber. I can't even imagine how that
this
would
is
taste.
Another one of those things where the country is so desolate and the people are so poor that they just have to eat every part of the animal that they can to stay alive. And then eventually it becomes, oh, it's one of our delicacies. It's not. It's gross, probably. And I'll if you guys want to eat it, fine.
It's probably healthier than glyphosate or our processed foods. It's got to be a lot healthier.
Like there's parts in Mexico where they'll just eat crickets. And, you know, sucker Americans will go down there and think, oh, this is exotic. I'm going to try it. It's just crickets.
Yeah.
It's going to taste exactly like a cricket. I'm sure there are some places where they fry them up, but there are literally places where they'll just serve you crickets in a tortilla. And it's like, oh, good. Yay. Yum.
Well, you know, everybody is puzzling over what's going on with this hospital ship thing, right? Nobody knows anything about it. They asked the Pentagon about it, and they said, we don't know. Ask the White House about this. Nobody knows. I got a theory. I think Trump overheard somebody talking about his mad ideas about taking over Greenland, and they said, "This guy is crazy. We need to get a ship him off to a hospital." And he goes, "Ship, hospital, Greenland." He puts it out there. That's my theory anyway. I don't know. It seems to fit better than any of the other theories about why he's talking about sending a hospital ship to Greenland.
So you think Trump does executive order by Mad Lib? He's got certain words already there, and he just fills things in, you know?
Yeah, who knows what it is. So Greenland is saying, we're healthy. We don't need it. We don't want it. We got all the seal blubber we can use. We don't need any more blubbering from Trump. And the Danish Defense Ministry said he had not been informed about a hospital ship heading toward Greenland, and American assistance was not needed. He said, we've got our own socialist medical system here. And but again, Trump's got a picture of a book that he put up on True Social. So it's on its way to help him. I wonder if this is a Trump-class hospital ship. Came up with Trump-class battleships. Now he's got a Trump-class hospital ship. I don't know. The question is, did Trump have any class? I don't think so.
You know, there was a time where people had the decency to know you don't name things after yourself. If you're a great person, eventually someone comes along and says, you know what, we should honor what they did. Yeah. We should create a museum or something and name it after them. Trump is just slapping his name on everything he can. It's, you know, it's a franchise presidency. It's like That's McDonald's. Right. You got to put the golden arches on it so they know.
As a matter of fact, somebody wanted to name an airport after him in Florida, and the Trump family said, yeah, but we still retain rights to the name, you know. So it is a franchise branding thing. But again, Travis, if Trump didn't name things after himself, who would? That's a realization he's come to, right? I don't think people are going to be going around naming things after Trump when he's gone. So he's got to do it himself while he's
there. We're going to have to spend all that money to take his name off these things eventually. And the thing is, you know the Democrats are petty enough to do that. They'll get into power, and then they're going to spend millions to billions of dollars renaming all these things that he put his name on.
I think they'll do it with the Kennedy Center. You know, the Kennedy Center was set up. They said, this is going to be in honor of John F. Kennedy. And no other name is going to be associated with. So what he does, Trump does it. So John F. Kennedy Center or whatever, and you see carved into the stone up there, he puts the Donald Trump, and he puts that above the original name that is there. And so they are real upset about that, because that's kind of like the crown jewel of the left. It's like, you know, where they do Broadway shows and things like that. So
some people look at Trump adding his name to the John F. Kennedy Center and say, why? Actually, everyone says that. Why?
Yeah, but Trump says, why not? So, yeah, he may be sending a ship to Greenland, but people are not taking ships to America. We have a deficit of tourists because 11 million visitors less coming to the United States, a continuing tourism slump. And, of course, it's having a big effect on Las Vegas, which I'm sure that breaks all of our hearts to see Vegas going down the tubes. You know, you roll the dice, you win some, you lose some. That's the motto of Vegas,
I guess.
Vegas,
the house
guess
doesn't always win.
That's right. Especially when people are staying in their house and not going to Vegas. But 11 million visitors short. And why is that? It's because of people looking at the authoritarian police state hellhole that Donald Trump is doing. And this is having a lot of effect on people who are trying to come to the country, for example.
So if we've got 11 million short visitors, are they all from China? Is that what they're...
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they're taking a short bus to America. But we are the only country that has had a decline in tourism, because everybody else is getting out and wanting to travel after the lockdown stuff, but they just don't want to come here. The example they lead off this story with out of the New York Times always began with an anecdote. Michelle Cowley, a London-based communications specialist, and her husband spent nearly 2 years planning a $16,000 vacation to Walt Disney World in Florida. I can't get my head around that. I mean, they opened up Walt Disney World when I was a junior in high school, and we used to go over there all the time because in the early days, you paid for parking and you could just walk into the park for free. It was a nice place to go hang out, and it wasn't overly crowded or anything. And if you wanted to ride rides, you could buy a ticket book. That's where they get the e-ticket stuff and all the rest of the thing. You know, it had like tickets that were rated from A to E, with E being the big attractions in each section. So we just go over there and kind of hang out. It was nice to do that. And then
But Michael Eisner took it over. He put everything under one ticket, made the rides, quote unquote, free. You didn't have to have a ticket for it, and then raised the prices up really high. It's unbelievable how expensive it is now. They and their children, 7 and 11 years old, heard about the shootings and what the ICE agents were doing, and they said, well, I'm not really sure we want to go there. And then they saw the threats to annex Greenland and other things like that, and said, we have decided it's really not the place that we want to be right now, they said. But there's better reasons than that for tourists. As a matter of fact, you know, we've reported many times about what's happening to people at the border. If you go back to February of last year, you had some German hikers, and they had a valid, B2 visa, I think. They'd been hiking in a lot of different countries, and this hiker had an American boyfriend. She had already hiked in the Pacific coast as well as on the Continental Divide. She was separated from her boyfriend, her American boyfriend, held in internment for quite some time, and for 24 hours. We had a similar situation happen to a couple of German tourists who were hitchhiking around the world. Not hitchhiking, but backpacking around the world. Very different things. They were backpacking around the world. They had been to many different countries, and they had just finished doing New Zealand, and they flew to Hawaii and were going to do that. Instead, they got hustled off to solitary confinement for 24 hours. They were strip searched. They put them in prison clothing, and they didn't know what was going to happen to them, and they were stuck there for 24 hours. That story went out. That was in April of last year. And when you look at how they're treating people who come into this country, I look at it and say, well, you know, why would anybody want to come here? I don't want to fly because of the way the TSA is and the way Border Patrol is. And so I would not want a vacation in a country that is like what we have become. And so, again, it's not unusual at all, but it is really being ramped up. And it is a bipartisan problem. This has been going on for quite a while. And the Trump administration is making it bigger all the time. So, again, if they didn't know what was going on with Border Patrol, they need to wake up and understand that issue. And now the Trump administration has escalated to the point where they need all kinds of biometric information about you. They need to have your complete social media history. And it's like, why would anybody come here? So again, last year's tourism worldwide was growing. The U.S. was the only major destination to see a decline in foreign visitors. Visitors from Canada plunged by 28%. And of course, you know, they're booing American teams now in Canada. This is all the result of one man and his team of thieving liars that he's got around him. Key markets like Germany and France also recorded significant declines, while Britain, the largest long-haul source market for U.S. tourism, saw a marginal growth of only 0.5% compared to the previous year. Because I guess police state doesn't deter you if you live in one already, like they do in the U.K. I see John Cleese said, they're going to arrest me at any moment for being a domestic terrorist because of my opinions and statements and jokes, right? And he's probably right. Probably right. Tyrants don't have a sense of humor. We've seen that from people in North Korea. As a matter of fact, Kim Jong-un just reelected himself. Trump aspires to that, I guess. Anyway, TSA and PreCheck and DHS were all very confused about what was going on over the weekend. TSA was saying the PreCheck was open after DHS said it was closed. Some airports were saying it was open, others saying it was closed because of the partial government shutdown. LA said Saturday, the LA airport, on social media that it was diverting all TSA PreCheck customers to general screening lines, later removed the post. San Francisco said that TSA PreCheck and Global Entry, quote, remain operational. So mixed signals. Does anybody know what's going on? And why do we have to have this kind of a permission society to travel in the first place? That's the thing that bothers me so much. And it's why I refuse to fly, because I just don't want to remind myself of what an authoritarian hellhole we've already become. It disgusts me to see these TSA people. It disgusts me to see what's going on in the airports. We ought to revolt against this stuff. As a matter of fact, when we tried to organize a revolt,
against it. We had the opt-out after they started doing the strip search and the naked body scanners. That first Thanksgiving, we opted out. We organized an opt-out, did it at InfoWars, and then what was the response? They shut down all screening on the busiest travel day of the year. That tells you everything you need to know. There's never been a threat to the airports or airplanes. And they said that in internal documents in 2011, and it was discovered as part of a lawsuit where they published the unredacted as well as the redacted documents that were part of discovery. Anyway, so we know it's all a fraud, but now you've got confusion between DHS and between the Department of Transportation, between the airports, TSA. Nobody knows what's going on. Typical of the Trump administration. A similar shutdown last year caused losses of more than $6 billion across the travel industry and related sectors. Democrats said on social media the administration was kneecapping the programs that make travel smoother and secure. No, please kneecap the TSA. We don't need them. You know, this is the difference, right? We could do perfectly well without the TSA at all. Instead, what the Democrats want to do is demand that we have the TSA and then demand that there be a pre-check program. I say get rid of all of it, flush it all. So they're ruining your travel on purpose, they said. Well, the TSA's existence ruins my travel. Outrage as Trump demands the firing of a corporate board member. And that's really what he demanded over the weekend. Now, if you hear who that corporate board member is and you say, good, I want her fired, right? You're part of the problem. Susan Rice, who I don't like her policies. I don't like Biden and Obama that she worked for. I disagree with her on everything. But what right does Trump have to demand that board members be fired because he doesn't like them personally? None. None. And so you want to make a hero out of Susan Rice, like Jimmy Kimmel and these other people? Come on, give me a break. This is the problem with Trump. This is why we can't get anything done. Because even when he gets on the right side of the issue, he destroys that issue. That's what people should be concerned about. It's not, you know, Trump comes out here and he talks about he's going to do this or that. And when he says he's going to do something that should be done, the way he does it makes it so odious that it'll be tainted and it'll taint anybody who actually tries to get it done. And so what he's doing here is threatening Netflix. Susan Rice is on the board of Netflix, and she was pointing out, I think rightfully so, that the Democrats are going to take revenge on the Republicans when they get back in place. Now, why is that something that Trump would take so much? Isn't that what he's doing, right? That's the problem. Because both of these sides are going to be taking revenge against each other, and both of them are after the rest of us. That's the real issue. All these powers that Trump is taking, ignoring the rule of law, pursuing personal vengeance, that's all going to be done by the left as well. And people say, well, Biden started it. I agree. And I said when Trump took office, he's already talking about how he's going to get revenge. Trump sounded exactly like Susan Rice does now. And I said he was wronged. It was wrong for them to come after him. And everybody realized that it was wrong. That was what got him elected, I think, more than anything else. People seeing him as a victim. He played that victim card. So he didn't even have to debate the other Republican candidates. He was a shoo-in. And yet, I said what really needs to be done is they need to prosecute some of the people who did this. They need to change laws and rules to make sure this doesn't happen again, what Biden did to Trump. Instead, Trump decides he's going to pursue personal revenge because what's important to him is his power, not that we have a just society that operates under the rule of law. And so this is the evidence of it. Netflix board member Susan Rice says corporations who took a knee to Trump will face an accountability agenda from elected Democrats if they win the midterms in 2026 and 2028 presidential elections. That was written by Laura Loomer. Then Trump added to it, Netflix should fire racist Trump-deranged Susan Rice immediately
or pay the consequences. Pay the consequences? She's got no talent or skills, purely a political hack. Her power is gone and will never be back. How much is she being paid? And for what? Well, attorney Ari Cohn chimed in and said, there is a 103% chance that Trump threatens to use the Department of Justice to block the Netflix Warner Brothers deal and clear a path for his buddies at Paramount if they don't fire Rice. An even higher percentage chance that he actually does it with or without an explicit threat. So that's the point. So he wants to see this as coming from, of course, again, he's going to do this for the Ellison family that owns Paramount now and CBS, and they want to buy Warner Brothers. And so Netflix wants to buy them as well. And so Trump can make them pay consequences. And it's corrupt. And it's illegal, and it's something that he shouldn't be allowed to do. And it's going to backfire on him as well. Brian Krasenstein says, Netflix is in a bidding war with Paramount for Warner Brothers. There are rumors that Trump may block the bid by Netflix. This is exactly how dictators act. How are the Republicans okay with that? Good question. Bottom line is that, you know, the other aspect of this is he could look weak and controlled by Ellison. He can look strong by saying, I blocked it because I don't like Susan Rice and the board of directors there at Netflix. That's another part of it, I think. Where are the people so concerned about cancel culture when the president is literally demanding the firing of a corporate board member, wrote Matthew Sheffield. He's absolutely right. However, Carrie Lake is out there saying, fire Susan Rice and cancel your Netflix account if you haven't already. Well, I don't like Netflix. I don't like Susan Rice. And I really don't like tyrants who whine about being victims of a cancel culture, as Eric and Don Jr. are claiming. We got to take over the dollar. Yeah, we're going to set up our own dollar in competition with these other stablecoins. And you need to help us to set up a global financial system with ourselves as king, because we were victims, and they just keep it going. This is a left-right march of tyranny. Well, what about those other guys? They did it, so now we can do it. Now we can use the government to take revenge on people. Susan Rice pointed out this is not going to end well for them. It's not going to end well for any of us. We're going to have the two parties becoming Hatfields and McCoys, and completely ignoring the rule of law. Jonathan Turley says, as the Democrats are planning for possible takeover of the midterms at the 2028 election, and look, let's understand, I don't think it's possible. I think it's inevitable. You always have a situation where in the midterm elections, you know, the off-year elections, so the president gets elected for 4 years, then every 2 years you've got congressional elections, House elections, and some Senate elections. Well, always in those off years, the party that hasn't won the White House in the previous election always loses seats, and they have a razor thin margin, only a seat or two in the House. So that's going to happen, especially when you throw in the betrayals of the base by the Trump administration, happening so many different ways. The majority is really at risk, I think, because there's a lot of people who are very upset about the betrayals of Epstein, and now he's doubled down on these health betrayals in terms of glyphosate, in terms of vaccines and mRNA and all the rest of this other stuff. They have backed down and broken all of those promises. So I think it's going to be a bigger trend than usual. So that's going to be there. And he says the Democrats are already plotting for what they're going to do, openly discussing their push for radical changes in our political system. I'm afraid he's right. The latest to join this revenge purge pledge is Susan Rice. And again, it is the Trump precedent. He's crossed the Rubicon, taking us from a republic to a revenge politics state. Susan Rice wrote, when it comes to elites, you know, the corporate interests, the law firms, the universities, the media, it's not going to end well for them. For those that decided that they would act in their perceived very narrow self-interest, which I would underscore is very short-term self-interest, and then take a knee to Trump. And so what she's saying is, these people who are violating the rule of law, these people who are doing this kind of stuff, they're setting themselves up. And these are, you know, the Democrats don't care about the rule of law either. They're going to, again, it's going to be an escalation, a ratcheting up. Every time they switch back and forth from left to right, from Republican to Democrat, they're going to ratchet up this revenge cycle. That's a given. As Jonathan Turley puts it, the age of rage. What I find interesting is that Jonathan Turley himself has been caught up in this partisan march of death. Nowhere in this article does he acknowledge that Donald Trump has played his part to escalate this. Yeah, it started with Biden, but Trump has escalated it to a new level. And so what he does say is this yielding to a mobocracy is one of the critical dangers that the framers sought to deter through protections against majoritarian tyranny. And yet Turley, a law professor, doesn't see Trump in any of this. I mean, just take a look at the tariffs and the rage and the, you know, I'm going to get even with you type of stuff that Trump does. First, he ignores the law. And then the rage and revenge that comes after that. And yet, you know, he says this about Susan Rice, and it's true about her. It's not going to end well for establishment figures like Rice, who believe that they can control a mob. Well, I don't think it's going to end well for an establishment figure like Trump, who thinks that he can control a mob. This is the way these Jacobin revolutions always turn, right? You wind up with the Robespierres on the guillotine themselves. Meanwhile, we have New York City, and he wants people to sign up as snow shovelers.
We're utilizing 33 DSNY vans and 2 DSNY buses to transport shovelers where they're needed faster. And for those who want to do more to help your neighbors and earn some extra cash, you too can become an emergency snow shoveler. Just show up at your local sanitation garage between 8 a.m. and 1 p.m. tomorrow with your paperwork, which is accessible online at nyc.gov/snow, and you can get started right away.
But still, you go out night after night, running around the city for what?
God gave me a gift. I shovel well. I shovel very well.
You shovel better than any man I've ever known. You're a good husband and a good father. Nothing more.
I believe in you, Daddy.
No. Not encourage your father.
I said I was going to leave you, Eddie.
The city's in peril, Lucille.
Please don't start.
I just came by to tell you that I love you. Tell the kids I love them.
I won't be here when you come home.
There may not be a home to come back to. Wish me luck.
It's okay.
They call me the shoveler.
That's my dad.
My hero.
Yeah. He shovels and he shovels well. That's Mystery Man, of course. Yeah, there may not be a home to come back to if you don't go out and shovel. So this is a call for all good shovelers to come to the aid of their city. And yet you have to have 5 forms of ID, but not to vote, just to shovel. And look, this is it's very funny. A lot of people have talked about how Mom Danny is putting out a call for emergency shovelers out there, but then says, you know, you got to have the all these different forms of ID in order to do it. I wonder if the shoveler had any ID. Did anybody check his ID in that movie, Travis? I don't remember. That was Mystery Men. Anyway, they start out at $19 an hour and they go up to $28.71. And I think this is the issue the media is missing for the most part. They've got to claw back this money in taxes. And so that's why they need to have all this ID stuff, right? But people do point out, why isn't it? Certainly understand why they, as an employer, would have to have ID for these people. But why don't we need to have ID for, because they're paying them, right? So they got to have some ID. Why wouldn't we need to have ID for the voters? Well, here's the answer, because the voters are going to make sure the politicians get their paychecks, right? So we're going to make that as easy as possible. No ID required for that. We're not legally permitted to hand out checks without completing the process of paperwork, but they don't need any paperwork
if they're the ones who are going to be collecting the checks at the end of the election. That's the reality. Well, as I mentioned earlier in the program, Heritage Foundation funded a study about state and local governments and the overwhelming costs that come from illegal immigration combined with public education. So again, as I said, you know, it used to be the Libertarian Party tried to open up the minds of college kids. They had an outreach program where they put up the Nolan chart that, first of all, it showed a political ideology map, if you will, that was not just left and right, but it was two-dimensional. And so they'd ask you some questions about economic liberty, some questions about civil liberty, and then they would plot you on the space. And so they basically came up with left-right, authoritarian, libertarian, and things like that. And the one question that I always disagreed with on them was open borders. I said, you can't have open borders and a welfare state. You've got to end the welfare state first. And I've been talking about the welfare magnet and the role of immigration since the 1980s and all of that. And so now what they're saying is they did a new report. The title of the report is Every State Should Challenge Plyler versus Doe. It's time to end free education for illegal alien K through 12 students. And they argue that the 1982 Supreme Court case, Plyler versus Doe, should be overturned. It presents model state legislation to allow schools to charge tuition for students who are here illegally. In the Supreme Court case, they ruled 5-4 the school district could not charge tuition to illegal alien students because it would violate the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. The clause requires states to treat all residents as equal under the law. That's not true, by the way. You know, when we look at the 14th Amendment, they keep mapping different things onto the 14th Amendment was there because we had newly freed slaves, and they were saying, you know, what do we do with them? Do we treat them as citizens or what? And they said, well, if they were born here subject to the jurisdiction, they need to be treated as citizens. That wasn't to say that anybody who, you know, they've extended that now to include anchor babies, and that's not what the 14th Amendment is about at all. Context matters. And so, the again, when we look at the anchor baby thing, like I said before, when Trump comes in, even if he's right on a particular issue, like ending the anchor baby situation with the 14th Amendment, he does it in such an odious and stupid way that he poisons it in order to be able to fix that situation. And it certainly does not require, it was never in mind that there would be a welfare state, certainly not a public school education system. None of that was in view with the 14th Amendment. So this is misapplying all of that stuff. Charging tuition, they said, to K through 12 students is very similar to the policies of state colleges and universities that charge out-of-state students higher tuition. But what they don't say in this, I don't know if they say it in the Heritage Report, but they don't say it in this article here from WND, is that illegal aliens get, you know, the Dreamers or whatever, get in-state tuition wherever they're going to go. So how is that equal protection for American citizens, right? I think in-state tuition, recognizing that the parents are residents and have been for a particular period of time paying taxes in that state and giving them an in-state tuition break, I think that's perfectly legit. And as they point out, there's been a lot of situations in states where if you decide that you want to go to a different school district, some states will let you do that if you pay a fee. And so they're saying when you look at the distinction between in-state and out-of-state tuition for colleges, if you look at the situation of school districts, where if you elect to go to a different school district, you can, but you have to pay different taxes because you haven't been taxed in that district, then why not do that for people who come here from another country illegally? And I would say exactly right. And it doesn't even have to be about illegal. It should be about the legal immigration as well. So if you're charging tuition for a U.S. citizen, a lawful permanent resident student from outside the school district to attend school district, but you're not charging illegal alien students, then you're creating a, you're treating U.S. citizens and permanent residents worse. And so it's not equal protection. Absolutely. The 34-page report points out limited resources of most school districts and the challenges that arise when an illegal alien student arrives at a school and requires additional attention or specialized resources due to language barriers, for example. And again, this should have been the number one priority, but not for the Trump administration, because they want to establish themselves as the toughest kid on the block. Don't mess with me, I'm the boss. So they focused on conflict. They focused on sending a bunch of thugs around to beat people up rather than focusing on the money. They aren't even focused on getting the fraud taken care of with the Somalis. In California, for example, there were 1.1 million students enrolled in the English Language Learners program in 2021. In 3 years, by 2024, data shows over 3.5 million immigrant children living in California, indicating that it had more than tripled. So, again, 3 years of Biden and it more than tripled. And I talked about that at the top of the program. I thought that was Texas, but that was California. In 2025, six states, Tennessee, Texas, Idaho, Indiana, Oklahoma, and New Jersey, introduced measures to either charge illegal aliens tuition or to report on students unlawfully present in the United States. However, none of these bills became law. And so again, folks, the answers to these issues are typically going to come from the state, not from the federal government. The federal government is the problem. It's not the solution. But what this shows you is that even though you've got six states, Tennessee, Texas, Idaho, Indiana, Oklahoma, New Jersey, even though you've got six states that tried to do this, none of them succeeded. I say that these problems are going to be solved at the state level if they can be solved. It's not going to be easy, but it's not going to happen at the federal level. Yet everyone is focused almost exclusively on what the federal government is doing. If a state does succeed in passing legislation to charge tuition to illegal immigrant children, of course they will be sued, and then Plyler should be overturned. So what they're saying is pass this legislation, make it a court case, and let's get that Supreme Court case overturned. Well, The states are spending the welfare cash that they're getting from the federal government in really strange and crazy ways. Again, they say, well, we need to have this for poor families. And yet, when you look at the amount of money, here's some of the examples. This program is called the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. They said a 2020 audit found that Mississippi spent $5 million that it got from the federal government in these TANF funds on a new volleyball stadium, and they paid NFL quarterback Brett Favre. I think it's Favre. Favre, yeah. You can tell I follow football a lot. I kind of heard this name somewhere. Anyway, they were going to pay this football player $1 million to speak, and he didn't even show up. And then later he gave that money back. But they paid $5 million for money that was supposed to go to needy families to help them buy food. They spent it on a new volleyball stadium. In 2025 audit in Louisiana found that for 13 years, the state didn't properly track whether the TANF recipients were working at least 30 hours a week as required by federal law, and on and on. It's like all these federal programs, you know, the worst possible people that you could have to do these charity programs or the federal government. And of course, they hate for you to call it charity, right? Charity is something that should be done. It's needed. But these people these socialists want to present it as I'm entitled to get that money. And it should be coming from the federal government. And they push it to the federal government because they know the federal government isn't going to know what it's doing. It doesn't even care. It throws money out to people for everything. Wall Street Journal analysts noted that both red and blue states are guilty of misusing their money. And we can go back to the CARES Act and the Payroll Protection Plan and things like that to see how that works out when Trump does it. He is saying we're going to pull back some of this money, but he's only focusing on the Democrat-controlled states because they're going to do this partisan red-blue nonsense again. Indicative of where we are. The FBI is going to lower requirements for special agents. you don't even have to be able to sign your name, evidently. Just put an X there, right? They are removing the requirements to, they would usually have a panel interview And they would have to complete a writing assessment. Now we're going to get rid of all that kind of stuff. I guess
FBI,
the only requirement...
putting the special in special agent.
Yeah, I guess the only requirement is blind loyalty to Trump and Cash Patel. That's the interesting part of this. Yeah, they have... I remember years ago there was a lawsuit brought by a cop in one of the New England states like New Jersey or New York or something like that, or Massachusetts. He wanted to be a cop. And they gave him an IQ test, and they wouldn't let him become a cop. They said his IQ was too high. Turned out he had average IQ of around 100, but they wanted people who were below average IQ for the police. And that was a stated policy. And they actually fought that in court, and all that stuff came out in court. No, our policy is we only hire people of below average intelligence. And he was fighting them because he was trying to prove that he had below average intelligence by fighting them for that. Who would want to have a job like that? I don't know when that's going to be your fellow workers out there. But he wants to reshape the Bureau, Cash Patel. And so the panel interview was something that was typically conducted by three trained agents. They would traditionally screen candidates on their life experience, on public speaking, and on critical thinking. Now that's going to be eliminated because I guess Cash Patel is worried that if you got somebody who has life experience, who can speak in public, and who has critical thinking, he'd be out of a job. They'd be promoting from within. He would be gone in no time at all. So that's our FBI of where we are. Patel has sought to reshape the FBI, referring to agents as cops and steering the Bureau more toward violent crime and immigration enforcement. Again, we didn't want to have federal police. And this is a part of, you know, him calling them cops is a very important tell. The Trump administration has been focused on federalizing the police. And it's another one of these areas where I'm absolutely amazed at how little pushback there has been from conservatives who've always understood how dangerous it was to centralize policing and have federal cops, especially now that they're not only all of that, but they are also militarized as well. And so they have cut back the training and the support for this, just as ICE has scaled back training. They used to have 5 months of training. Now they do 45 days of training, and it shows, doesn't it? I think it really does show as to what is happening on the thing. Well, before we run out of time here, I want to talk a little bit about that betrayal, because we had some major betrayals in the last couple of days. As Brian Shalhavi points out, he says the MAGA cult is destroying America. This is at healthimpact.com. He said, I've been watching for defections in the MAGA cult ever since the Epstein files have been released, which so clearly show how Trump and most of his regime were complicit with Epstein's horrible crimes of sex trafficking and his criminal financial empire. Honestly, other than possibly Marjorie Taylor Greene, a politician in the House of Representatives who quit and is now saying the right things, I haven't seen any defections from the MAGA cult. He said, Catherine Austin Fitz was recently interviewed by a MAGA supporter. I watched the interview, tried to understand the thinking of those in the MAGA cult, and it was very important and informative. And again, Catherine Austin Fitz is not going to change her views based in order to placate the interviewer. She's going to tell you what she thinks is true, and she usually understands what is true. I'm not seen anything I've disagreed with Catherine Austin Fitz on. MAGA believers often email me in their condescending tones. He said, here's an example. This is from somebody identified herself as Sharon Allaire. She said, Epstein was hired by our government. I know it sounds crazy, but it was the best of two possible evils. Children were being trafficked by the thousands, and they knew who was doing it, but they couldn't catch them because of how it was being done. So you see all this stuff about all the cover-up of Epstein in the minds of the QAnon people and the Trump MAGA cult. This is all part of the plan. Listen how she explains this. She said Epstein Island was the plan. Yes, children were there, but they were out to catch the elites who were responsible for thousands of kids. And they caught the elites, the Clintons, Biden, the Rothschilds, movie stars, CEOs. They have gone before military tribunals at Gitmo, and they're all dead. Did you know that? She said, what you are seeing are clones of these people. Isn't this amazing? And it gets even nuttier, this letter. I won't read the whole thing to you, but you realize how incredibly stupid these people are. They said this email from Sharon is so typical of those in the MAGA cult who email me. She offers no proof, no links, no references, not even much of an appeal to authority. And there certainly isn't, in other words, like, well, I know somebody who does this, or I'm a person who does research or whatever. And there is absolutely no appeal to sanity either. He said, but what if the entire MAGA movement turned on Trump right now and demanded justice for the children that he has been part of raping and torturing? But they won't, because most of them are also Zionists who literally worship Israel, and they think Trump is their savior, while they give lip service to Jesus as Christians. If the U.S. doesn't attack Iran and start World War III, we can all, if it does, I should say, we can all blame the MAGA cult, because without them, Trump would be powerless. And here's an example of the betrayal. I guess this is all part of the plan as well, to tell people that you're going to get poison out and then to protect the poisoners. As a matter of fact, I had a clip in here of Trump. Here we are. Yeah.
A lot of that's common sense, too. It's all common sense when you get right down to it. But we're going to get toxic chemicals out of our environment, and we're going to get them out of our food supply. We're going to get them out of our bodies. We'll get them out of our body, right? Right?
What a betrayal. Yeah, trust the scam. Trust the scam. Well, we've got to get these toxic chemicals out of our bodies and everything. You know, like fluoride and glyphosate, things like that. There was a long battle for fluoride, and it was won in the court. And then the Trump EPA decided that they were going to appeal that and fight it. They want to keep fluoride in the water. As a matter of fact, they want to keep glyphosate in your food as well. And so we had last week, I talked about it, the deal that Bayer and, you know, who bought Monsanto and basically owns Roundup glyphosate, the deal that they struck with the courts to say, well, we've got, we've had tens of thousands of lawsuits of people who got non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is pretty well linked to glyphosate, and they've been able to prove it. And so it's kind of like the vaccine stuff in so many different ways. They gave liability protection to the vaccine companies because they said, well, the vaccines are inherently unsafe. Well, so is glyphosate. And it is everywhere. So what does Trump administration do about it? Well, first of all, the company is going to get away with literally getting away with murder. They put in like $7 billion into a fund, and when you got tens of thousands of people, what are these people going to get? You know, a couple thousand dollars off of compensation, off of this stuff, and it's what they're setting up, because who knows how many there's going to be in the future. And then Trump comes in, and he says, well, we're going to use the Defense Act in order to compel the manufacture of glyphosate. And we're going to give them legal immunity as well, just like the vaccine companies. And the Republicans are cheering it in Congress because of Big Ag. And let me just say this before we cut the broadcast. When you look at what is happening, why are Republicans and Big Ag doing this? You got a lot of farmers who are not happy about glyphosate. They're not happy about other chemicals like this, like dicamba. They talk about the dicamba drift. They're trying to grow organic food or food without chemicals, and yet this stuff drifts onto their property and contaminates their land, and it poisons the land. Because the big part of this business model that Monsanto had, and they drove a lot of farmers in India into suicide because they got them to use glyphosate on their land, and then they couldn't grow anything unless it was a GMO seed from Monsanto. So you put this poison on your land, and not only is it unhealthy for us when it gets into the food, but it poisons the land so that you can't grow real food on it. Only the genetically modified product from Monsanto that you got to buy every year. And that's an issue. And that's why they've been losing these lawsuits that when they would prohibit the use of glyphosate in certain areas, and Monsanto spent $8 million in one local election and still lost because the people were farmers and they understood what the issue was. And so what they did was they took the issue to Washington. If you take it to Washington, you can get these corrupt politicians to do anything. You pay them and they say, we're going to stop this patchwork quilt of regulations, and so we're going to regulate it from Washington, and then they don't regulate it at all. And then it gets even worse. Then they give them legal immunity. even though these people are peddling poison and know it and have known it for a long time. And so where does Big Ag come into it? The Republicans are applauding this and saying this is absolutely essential because they're in the pocket of Big Ag. Big Ag doesn't care if they're giving you food with chemicals that are carcinogenic. They don't care about that. They're only concerned about producing a massive quantity of food that they can sell you. And then if it kills you, they don't care about it. Just like the pharmaceutical companies. And the Republicans and Democrats are doing the same thing they do with them. And they want to tell us that this is all about making America healthy again. They're lying to your face. It's disgusting. And again, I want to thank the people who have given us some tips before we stop. I'm Marty. Thank you very much, Marty. He says, in honor of the two trolls who gave this episode two thumbs down, here's cat's money. My usual monthly snail mail check departed my mailbox on Saturday. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that, Marty. Bob of Atlantis gifted a subscription. Thank you, Bob. And IRS Machine Gun. Again, another tip. Thank you so much. A great show today. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a good day. We'll see you tomorrow, hopefully.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.